Sounds like a sprinkler, doesn't it?
New Order.
Is it New Order? Their sprinkler album?
It does sound like a sprinkler.
Yeah, like one of those oscillating sprinklers.
An oscillating.
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 Hi, guys. It's Bill and Wendy. I have a... Mary, are you nearby?
Yes.
I have to ask you a question. Wendy, you may know the answer to this, but my money is on Mary.
So zip it?
No, you could know. Okay. You might know this. Why are the princes fighting? Why are Princes Harry and William fighting?
You know what? I just read a huge article on it in The People, and it didn't... It doesn't say? It was this huge article, but it's just mostly pictures, and why are they fighting? And it basically came down to the fact that they just want their own space.
Oh, is that what it is?
Even
princes need their own space.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't think they're fighting. I just think, you know, with the baby coming, and then they got the three kids at Kensington.
Yeah.
That it's just too much
pressure.
They wanted to move out to Frogmire. Is that the name of the place?
Frogmire.
Yeah, the new estate they're moving to.
Did you see the footage of them at? They were at an Easter ceremony at the church in England,
throwing eggs at each other.
Oh, Wendy, which is inappropriate
really
for the princes.
Were they plastic eggs?
They wouldn't address each other. There was very awkward body language. There was no words between them whatsoever. And then I read today that it's possible that Prince Harry and Meghan Markle will be exiled to Africa.
Oh.
I thought they were just moving.
Yeah.
It's worse than moving. They're being told that they have to leave, that they need to leave.
What?
It's very uncomfortable.
Well, I heard she might have her baby in the Frogmire estate.
Oh, really?
Instead of going, Frogmire.
It's their place. They're living, and it looks like a train wreck.
That's the palace that Hoppity Hooper used to live in, Mary. Is that the one?
Yeah, exactly. It's full of, you know, the landscaping needs to be done. It looks like a bunch of weeds growing around.
Oh, no.
According to Women's Day magazine last November, Prince Harry and Prince William suffered a falling out over Christmas last year, so 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
After Harry claimed his older brother wasn't making enough effort to welcome his soon-to-be wife, Meghan, into the family.
That's a rumor I've heard, too, Wendy.
Because she's American.
That's the rumor I keep hearing.
I mean, the palace put out a statement. Kensington Palace said the men are at different stages in their life and no longer boys.
Oh.
No longer the boys the world knew when they were growing up.
Is that their polite way of saying that they're feuding?
Well, I mean, if the palace puts out a statement saying something like there are different stages in their life.
Yeah.
That acknowledges something, I guess.
I think it does.
They're supposed to show up at all the same big events, you know, still together.
But to that,
when
Mary,
the queen is involved.
Here's what I'm reading. Is that Princess Kate is not happy with all the attention that Meghan Markle gets, so she's putting pressure on her husband to stay clear of them. Is that possible?
Yeah.
Very upsetting.
Well, I don't know.
Very upsetting.
Royals.
Yeah, there's a lot of hormones going around.
Wendy, what you just said, that sums it all up.
It seems normal that they'd be having issues.
Yeah.
They'll explain it in The Crown in about 10 years. We'll see it.
Exactly.
We have to wait 10 years?
Yeah.
Will this show up on Game of Thrones at all, Steve, or is this out of bounds?
Don't start on that, because Jasmine's already angry with me.
Why?
You missed quite a morning.
What happened? She raises her voice at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, she got furious with Steve.
Typically, she doesn't. What happened? What'd you do, Bertrand?
I just said I haven't been enjoying, I don't like the North, and much of the Game of Thrones has been in the North, and she... just said it hasn't, and then, I mean, it has. I don't know what else to say.
Jasmine?
No comment.
It was a very... You think it's cold in Game of Thrones, Wendy. You should have been in that office this morning as they were going back and forth on what they like and don't like.
Now, I know Jasmine loves it.
Loves
Bertrand,
it.
You don't love it, right?
No, I mean, I really love the series, but the first two episodes...
Steve said he wants more naked people. He's not getting enough naked
why
people.
Why is it they never warn us before a show? They warn us about brief nudity. They never warn us about lengthy nudity.
That's
right.
That was Steve. I got to be honest with you. It's what you're saying is true.
Lengthy
so.
Time
what
period
does that mean?
Or lengthy
the amount
no,
the amount
no.
of naked people
so
on
that
your TV screen.
Legs? Oh, I thought he meant the whole body.
Full frontal?
No, I'm just.
So, just, are you a prude? Well, I don't understand what's happening.
No,
here.
He wants more.
Oh,
he's
I'm
saying
sorry. Okay,
there's not been enough. He says.
Are the dragons naked?
Dragons are always naked.
No, mostly I don't want to complain about it because I think they're just setting up the series. But, you know, it's all been in the North, and I've never liked that particular set because I get cold easily.
Isn't it funny? Steeper travel.
When you, yeah.
Oh, you still have your cold. You poor thing.
Can I correct myself about the frog? Frogmore.
Frogmore.
Frogmore. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
That's what I was thinking.
That's the name of the cottage. Sorry.
Isn't it funny when you love a TV show and they have an episode that's not a great show, you always rationalize it by saying, well, what they're doing now is they're setting things up for the future. It'll be better in the future. Last night's episode, not good, but they're setting things up for...
We say that about our baseball teams, football teams.
It's a rebuilding process.
Yes.
It's all rebuilding.
They clearly are building up to something really big that looks like it'll happen next episode, but
right.
Then I hope they get the hell south.
So everybody's fighting on Earth Day. Today's Earth Day.
Isn't that ironic?
I get Earth Day and 420 mixed up, and I know 420 is 420 because it's in the name. But
right.
I thought they were the same day. And I get Record Store Day mixed up, too. That's 4/13, I think.
And when is Cinco de Mayo this year, Wendy?
Sometime in May.
Coming up.
Is Record Day 4/13 for a reason?
Yes, but I don't remember
why.
I wish
because
Val Camaletti was still around to ask her. This was the first year we haven't had her on to talk about it.
Because she died.
Thank you, Bill.
That's the main reason. Well, they have to have it a different day because they can't have it. It would make sense if it was on 33 and a third or on 45th, but you can't. Let's don't go that high.
Oh.
Right, and 4 times 13 is 72, like the old 72s.
There's that.
Yeah. Well, 45, you could have it on April 5th. 4/5.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah
but then you'd have to have that little disc to put in the middle of it.
Right, the adapter.
Mm-hmm.
You'd always have to carry an adapter. It'd be too much.
I do.
I know you do.
And
I'm sure
it's,
you do.
Not Jobo, but the other one, Eddie. He wears, it's like a gold-dipped little...
A gold-dipped adapter?
Yeah, it's really
cool. He wears
cool.
that around his neck at all times?
It's kind of cool.
Wow.
He played a lot of those records, man.
That's heavy. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's so much to discuss. Stay right here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. You're the only person I know who has the same initials as her favorite team.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Did you see that over the weekend in Ukraine? I'm saying that right, right? Because for a while you had to say...
What would it be called? The Ukraine?
Yeah, for a while it was called the Ukraine, and then they just, at some point, they changed it to just Ukraine. It's not the Ukraine anymore, it's Ukraine.
It used to be the breadbasket of the Soviet Union.
It was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. The new president of Ukraine, formerly the Ukraine, now currently Ukraine, is a man named Volodymyr Zelensky, who is a comedian. They voted in a guy whose job it was until he became the president of Ukraine. He was on a TV show, much like Alec Baldwin on Saturday Night Live, where he plays a version of the president. That was his job up until this weekend. He was on a TV show in Ukraine pretending to be the president, and now he is the president.
So are you saying Alec Baldwin is going to be our next president?
Our next president.
And Julia Louis-Dreyfus will be the vice president?
Yes, I'm
okay with that.
That's what's coming. Well, here's what I was thinking because of this. What comedian today, either stand-up or sketch comedy, you know, a comedic actor, would you trust to be the president of the nation? Is there anybody who comes to mind that you go, oh, I know I only know him from doing comedy, but I bet his policy would be great. I bet he'd really further our country.
Well, I would say Jon Stewart. Would you count him?
Oh, yes. Steve, that's perfect. Jon Stewart would be that's one of the first names that would come to mind. Jon Stewart.
Pauly Shore.
That one not as
not
much.
Not in the no. upper chair, maybe?
No.
Be at the kids' table in the debate, I think.
Is he still around doing stand-up or anything?
Yeah, he is.
How?
Don't know. You know, the closest I think we've come to this, well, two names come to mind. Al Franken.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who got, I mean, he wasn't the president, but, you know, he went pretty far in Minnesota. Pat Paulson used to run for president. This is years and years and years ago.
That wasn't for real.
No one
though.
Took him. No,
yeah.
Everybody knew.
He was
just
I got,
kidding around.
Pat Paulson grew on me. I mean, he was funny when I first saw him, and then it was like the same thing. Al Franken, same thing, kind of.
Pat Paulson used to do it. For people who don't know who he is, he was a comedy writer and a stand-up comic. He was on the Smothers Brothers show quite often. But remember, he always used to do this thing where he would walk on water.
No, I don't remember
they
that.
They used to bring in, like, this giant water tank. He'd be on Mike Douglas or The Tonight Show or something, and then he pretended to walk on water. That was his thing. I don't know. But he did. He used to run for president every 4 years. I mean, he's been gone for several years, but But in that case, everyone knew it was a joke. But other than John Stewart, is there anybody? I think Joe Piscopo ran for some office years ago. He does radio show now.
Maybe he did better in the political world than he did
in comedy.
Yeah. I mean, there's a guy named Ronald Reagan who went from
actor.
He wasn't funny. He wasn't really.
He was pretty funny. There were times where he was kind of funny. But he would be more Steve, of course, an actor.
Okay, I got you. Right. He's got to be a comedian.
Although he did do, I mean, there were some comedies mixed in with his work. Of course, the classic Bedtime for Bonzo.
Yes.
I don't want to leave up Bedtime for Bonzo.
Still cry when I watch that.
Stephen Colbert, does he count?
Stephen Colbert would count. Would
Roseanne Barr?
As potential, as they could run for office and we would say, yeah, they'd be good in the political arena, you mean?
Well, she, many years ago, was seeking the Green Party nomination for president.
Oh,
Roseanne
she
was.
Did.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that. Did she end up on the ballot for that? Do you remember?
I don't believe so.
I remember
so.
Her running, but I don't remember it coming full circle and her actually making the ballot.
Sonny Bono, although he wasn't really a stand-up comic, but he was funny.
He did comedy. So
he was,
so maybe.
A congressman, right?
Yeah, he was.
In California.
Fred Grandy.
I was just thinking of an actor. Once we got into Sonny, Fred Grandy from
right.
Iowa.
Right.
And
what did he, was he a senator?
No, he was a member of Congress.
Member of Congress?
Republican.
Yeah. That would be for people who know the name but don't know who that is, that would be Gopher from the Love Boat.
You know what's funny? Now that you do that, all the people from entertainment, which you think of as a more liberal area, right?
Yeah.
All the members of Congress or elected officials that I can think of right away are all Republicans.
Was Sonny Bono a Republican?
He was a Republican.
He was.
Fred Thompson.
Oh, right, the actor.
A Republican. Ronald Reagan, of course.
Yeah.
Fred Grandy.
Schwarzenegger.
Schwarzenegger. So Franken was a Democrat.
Right.
The wrestler, he was a Republican, I think? The Minnesota governor.
What's his name? I'm blanking on his name.
Tommy Two-Tone, the shorts. I don't know.
What, did you remember who we're talking about?
No.
The wrestler.
Yeah, you do. I'll find it.
There are many wrestlers.
No, but
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan.
No.
It's not Hulk Hogan.
I'm sorry, I was looking up...
you weren't even listening
Dick
to your own
show. No, Dick Gregory was...
Did he run for office?
An unsuccessful bid for Chicago mayor.
Jesse Ventura.
Jesse Ventura, thank you, Steve.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. I don't remember
not
what
Owen
his
Wilson,
tagline
Jesse
is.
Jesse Ventura.
I'll stop with that. And then there's this comic, Drew Hastings.
I know Drew. I used to work with him. He was mayor of something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he was mayor of Hillsboro, Ohio.
He was he also a Republican, by the way.
Can I, just going back to Jesse, he was a member, the only governor ever, or politician to win election under the Reform Party.
Oh, really?
Which I think was Ross Perot's prerogative, right, or initiative?
Yeah.
But so he wasn't a Republican.
But other than the one that you mentioned, Steve, like John Stewart comes to mind immediately, maybe Stephen Colbert, I'm having a hard time thinking of anybody from the world of comedy, either stand-up or you know, sketch comedy, that kind of thing, who would stand any kind of a chance whatsoever of running for office. Nobody's coming to mind.
Dan?
Yes?
How are you this morning?
I am fine.
Happy
What's up,
Easter
Dan?
Monday.
Same to you.
Thanks.
Gracie Allen actually ran for president.
As a joke.
From Burns and Allen. No, look it up on Wikipedia. It was actually a joke, I believe, on their radio program. They decided to run with it. And if I'm not mistaken, she did a short train campaign from L.A. to, I don't know, somewhere, a couple hundred miles or something like that. It's on Wikipedia. I heard it on an old-time radio show. I looked it up. It's on there. She just ran. I don't know what year it was.
Sometime probably in the 40s, I'm guessing.
Probably, yeah. Exactly.
Interesting.
So,
wow. Well, thanks for that, Dan.
Yes,
appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Sorry. Thank you for listening. I'm sorry. My finger was very quick
today.
He was
about to say the thing I love most about you guys is you never cut off callers.
John Nard. Does that ring a bell?
John Nard? No,
Jean Narr, G-N-A-R-R. He was an Icelandic comedian, And he started with a mayoral campaign in 2010. That was a joke until he was actually elected mayor of Iceland's capital city, Reykjavik.
Reykjavik.
Yeah, thank you. I knew you'd know because Steve Bertrand traveled.
We've been there. No J's. Don't pronounce the J's.
Reykjavik?
In one of the articles I read about Zelensky's win in Ukraine, it said he's the third comic who's won a presidency worldwide this year.
Really?
But they don't list the other two. I'm sure I could find it somewhere online, but three different times this has happened already. So it's something of a trend.
What's next?
What's next?
Some people say that Donald Trump is a comedian.
I've heard that. All right, we'll take a break.
Well, he was a TV guy.
He was a TV guy. Yeah, there's something to that.
Yeah, that's true.
Thanks, Steve. It's Bill and Wendy. Tom Mikitas joins us right now by way of the telephone. Tom's a professor of history at DePaul University, a terrorism expert, and author of Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat. Tom, thank you for being here. Really appreciate it.
Good morning.
You're here, obviously, to talk about the situation in Sri Lanka over the weekend. The death toll stands at 290 people as of right now. There was another bomb that went off earlier this morning. Can you, if you wouldn't mind, Tom, just a brief overview of what took place the last couple of days?
Yeah, I was in Sri Lanka back in 2007 and again in 2011 doing some counterterrorism work. And this is a bit surprising because they came out of a long period of civil war, and it's been pretty quiet for the last decade. But what we saw is 8 near simultaneous attacks on Easter Sunday targeting places of worship, the Catholic minority, which is about 6% of the population, as well as some Catholic shrine and, you know, several hotels frequented by foreigners. Death toll now stands at 290. No claim of responsibility, but the fingers are being pointed at this point at a little-known Islamist group active on the island, but before now has never really gotten involved in this level of violence.
More than 500 people are injured. It's just, I can't even believe these numbers. There are reports that I've been hearing this morning that government officials in Sri Lanka had a warning of these attacks earlier in the month. What do you know of that?
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've hit my head against the wall over the frustration of bureaucratic stovepiping, which means that intelligence gets bottled up in compartments, left on desks and offices, and never makes it up to the top of a command chain to get action taken. In many cases, it's no more than a strategic warning, hey, something could happen within this period. Case, it appears to have been more specific, and for whatever reason, it never got transferred over. But, you know, as I said, I've seen it a lot. There were similar things before 9/11 in the U.S. There was a warning of an attack on Garissa University in Kenya a couple of years back during Easter time. And again, the government missed it. So sadly, this happens far more than any of us want to recognize.
So, Tom, in these instances, what you have there is you have the information given to you. It's just that it's not shared properly between the offices. Is that what's going on?
We're speculating here, but that's a pretty good guess. Bureaucracies are set up to do routine tasks extremely well. A couple of things they don't do well is to cooperate across agency boundaries for all kinds of reasons. There aren't communication links. There are rivalries. There are conflicting missions. All kinds of things get in the way of that. And so it's easy for one agency to get information for it simply not to make up through that agency's chain of command to someone who can get it addressed and taken care of.
And what would they do with that information? I mean, there were, three hotels, six simultaneous explosions. What could they have done knowing and putting that warning in effect?
They could have done a fair amount. Going back to my own experience, when I was there in 2007, there actually was an attack on the Pakistani ambassador, and we had armed guards in front of the hotel, and we were on a lockdown. So they're used to doing this. I mean, they had that ability, but when I returned a couple of years later, everybody had breathed a collective sigh of relief, and one of the things that was so refreshing was the relative lack of security. So in the absence of clear warning, you know, it's labor-intensive and costly to put on a full kind of protection. It doesn't always work. I mean, you know, we saw with the Ariana Grande attack in Manchester a couple of years ago. They just waited until the crowd came out in the foyer after the concert. So there's no foolproof security, especially against terrorists who are interested in just killing large numbers of human beings wherever they happen to be. You know, you harden this building is the term we use. They can go next door. Now, doesn't mean nothing could have been done. But the other interesting thing to me is they had a pretty rapid roundup of people, which tells me you don't do that unless you either have pretty good information of who they are or you're casting a very wide net. It appears there was even something of a shootout because three policemen, I believe, were killed. So, you know, they obviously, when they put the puzzle together very quickly after the fact. But again, also to be fair, there's a great deal we don't know at this point.
As of now, Tom, and you mentioned this, no one has claimed responsibility for these attacks. What are the pros and cons of that move? Why wouldn't you claim responsibility if you have a message you want to get out?
Well, the question is who did it, first and foremost. As I said, a little-known Islamist group on the island. It's a Muslim population of, it's under 10%. And they've been known, like, for example, to vandalize Buddhist shrines. It's a 70% Buddhist country. But they haven't done anything like this before. On the other hand, there's speculation that they may have had ties to ISIS. And you may recall in our previous conversations that we talked about, you know, well, ISIS, as the caliphate is out, but that doesn't mean that the operatives in the network aren't functioning. This is a highly sophisticated, very coordinated series of attacks that took a lot of planning and were carried out ruthlessly but very efficiently. And that suggests that a level of expertise that a local group may not have had. So, you know, and there is some evidence that, that some Sri Lankan Muslims did go to Syria to join ISIS and may have come back. That's the biggest worry that a lot of states are facing today. What do you do with returnees, especially when you see something like this?
So, Tom, what's your guess in a situation like this? Does a local group in Sri Lanka say to ISIS, on the whole, we are planning an attack, help us through this, we need your support on this, or does the main office, ISIS, say, oh, we got to pick some places around the globe to attack, let's go local with Sri Lanka? How does that play out? Which way?
It could be either, although the central office is kind of in disarray at the moment, or a third option, which is we're seeing more commonly in what's called a mesh network, where there's great decentralization. There's a general mandate, hey, whenever you can strike a blow for the cause, do it. You know what our guidelines are. You know, we like highly symbolic days and we like highly symbolic targets. You know, and they got both. It was some early speculation. Was this the group that we were concerned with over there in 2007, LTTE, the Liberation Tigers of Tamil and Elam, was an ethno-nationalist terrorist group that was pretty much, you know, destroyed in 2009. But the odd thing was when they hit Christian targets, that suggested, you know, that they didn't fit the Tamil pattern. The other thing that's very curious to me, I at the back of my mind, I'm kind of milling around with the idea that is this in some way intended as a message in response to Christchurch? You hit us, we're going to show you. We can hit you at your places of worship as well. I mean, it's madness, but it would if that is true. It's also a very focused kind of madness, and it is the way, sadly, that some of these extremists think.
Now, you mentioned civil war ended, a decade ago?
2000, yeah, a decade ago.
Why now? Why this now?
Well, you have to look at the contemporary war. There's no connection to the civil war that we can see so far of a decade ago. This is, and it appears to be, Islamist extremism. So this is the thing that I keep stressing and that I cover in the book is that, you know, groups come and go. The ideologies are tenacious and pervasive. They hang around a really long time. And so I'm not, you know, I'm saddened but not surprised. And I, you know, much as we talk about, I always take a look at the glass being half full, I'm afraid we may be in for more of this as, you know, we see that this organization in the Middle East being disrupted, but the network that is global, though, you know, more concentrated in some areas than others, is going to continue to function and continue to carry out attacks.
Does Sri Lanka have the resources on its own to fight this, or who do they partner up with to fight this?
Well, we will certainly help them. They have a lot of experience. It is a relatively poor country. They have received aid. They've gotten it from us. They've gotten it from China. particularly as part of the global war on terror. You know, and I don't know where the state of that now is. I imagine it tapered off once the Civil War, the conflict ended. But you know, I don't doubt that we will continue to help them. But you know, it's more of a law enforcement than a military kind of thing. It's an intelligence gathering thing. You know, the terrorists are very good at countering. They're not going to take us on by playing our game. They're going to do this kind of stuff, which is very, very hard to prevent. Now, they did something very controversial but understandable in circumstances. The government has shut down access to social media because they're very concerned about communal violence, because they had a couple of years ago I think it was Buddhist riots against Muslims. So the last thing you want is people out there trafficking in conspiracy theories and whipping up, you know, any kind of hysteria that could lead to yet more violence.
There has been a travel advisory issued as of Easter Sunday yesterday to exercise increased caution in Sri Lanka due to terrorism. Any worries for future attacks?
Well, obviously, when you have something this catastrophic, you have to take it seriously. Although, you know, if you looked at there are some areas where you clearly don't go. On the other hand, the State Department's warnings tend to be partly designed to protect themselves from being accused of not giving warnings. Sri Lanka, you know, is a lovely place. I think, yes, caution, being aware of your surroundings and things of that nature. But I don't know that it would merit canceling plans if you have them already, because the state will be on heightened alert and you'll see more security on the streets. I've seen that when I was there. And, you know, it means you may restrict your activities. But the truth is, very unlikely Americans or Europeans are going to go there under these circumstances. And that's what part of what the terrorists want. Not, you know, they did this in Mumbai, India back in 2004. They just did it again, where they ended up targeting places where there are foreign nationals. That really hits the country's tourist industry.
That's what I was about to ask, Tom, is how reliant is Sri Lanka on tourism dollars? Is that one of their main sources of income over there?
It is. Not just, by the way, for Westerners. It's very interesting. There are a significant number of halal hotels and restaurants. It's a very popular place for Gulf Arabs to take vacations as well as Westerners and so on. I mean, for example, you know, English is one of the major languages because it was a former British possession. So you don't have, you know, it's easy to get around and to function in the language. It's a beautiful country. You know, nice beaches, warm oceans, some very interesting, you know, tourist things to see. And not outrageously expensive. So, you know, in that regard, you have people from all over the world, as far away as the Netherlands, Britain, Japan, etc. Some there on business. So, yeah, I mean, it is definitely going to cost them.
Tom, we appreciate your expertise on this. We really do. Stay safe and have a great rest of the week.
Yeah, the final note, so I can end on my usual encouraging thing. You know, Americans have little, you know, I mean, this stuff can happen. I've never restricted my travel or changed my plans to an attack, and I don't intend to start. So, you know, I think we got to go on with the assumption everything will be okay.
All right.
There's my human Prozac.
There it is.
Finally.
Came through for us.
You bet.
Tom Mikaitis, professor of history at DePaul University, terrorism expert, and author of Violent Extremists, Understanding the Domestic and International Terrorist Threat.
And that'll be released in June, so we'll talk to you then. You can find him, Dr. Mikaitis, on Twitter, at Dr. Mikaitis, MOCKAITIS. Thank you so much.
You bet. Have a nice day.
I'm glad he did the nice
ended
thing.
Ended on a happy note.
All right. Well, we'll keep you posted on any further developments. As you mentioned, some other bomb was found this morning. There might be more. We've got you covered right here, 720 WGN.
Steve, was there almost a trace of guilt in your voice as you announced the number 77 as the temperature?
Why?
It just seemed like there was some guilt.
I'm thinking, I got to get outside.
I know.
That's what I'm thinking.
Wasn't it gorgeous yesterday?
Perfect. Couldn't be nicer.
Beautiful. Can I say something really weird?
Yeah.
The birds were so loud yesterday, and
what was all that about?
We have woodpeckers and doves and all this, and I'm sitting in the back porch. I mean, I haven't been out much lately, but I just wondered if it's because there are no leaves if the sound...
To deaden the sound?
No cushion.
Yeah. Oh. I don't know, but I mean, it was striking how loud they were.
Yes, I agree with you, because I heard a couple of woodpeckers, mm-hmm. and typically in the summer you don't hear them as much. It just mm-hmm. seemed like it was much more quiet. And this morning, Jim got up and closed the window, and I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, it's really hot in here. The birds, they were so loud.
Yeah. Yeah. We finally started feeding the woodpeckers this year, because we have a cedar house, so they just wreak havoc on the house. So I finally started putting food out for them.
What do they eat?
Suet, like a suet, like suet cake.
Mm-hmm. I remember in elementary school, we would make that. You'd take a bacon grease, and you'd just put a bunch of seeds in there, and then you froze it or something. But for some reason, then once it congealed, it stayed pretty hard.
Wouldn't degeal?
No.
You got to put out a cookbook, Wendy. Yeah. That sounds so delicious.
The woodpecker cookbook.
Yes, I'm in. All right, I have a story to read, but I need some guidance first.
No, you're looking to the wrong people here.
Somebody here must know the answer to this. I found a story that's very similar to the story I was telling you last week. Remember we were talking about how in Florida, for some reason, there's an overabundance of alligators.
Oh, yeah, and they're in the mood.
They're just, yeah, they're plentiful, and they're...
What was the headline?
Amorous. Something about horny alligators.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Said it right in the headlines. So I told you how when my aunt and my cousins moved from Tinley Park to Florida, my cousins were out in the backyard playing, and they said to their mom, is it okay if we have a pet alligator? And she goes, yeah, sure, whatever, like that. And she just went on with her life. And then she looked out there, and they were coaxing an alligator out of a creek and into their yard, right? So I found a story that's similar to this about a woman in Ohio who tells the story about how there was an opossum living in her daughter's bedroom for 3 days, and she just thought nothing of it. She thought her daughter was making up the story.
Oh my.
But here's the weird... But I'll tell you the story, but here's the strange part. In both the headline and in several parts of the story, when they refer to this opossum, it always says a opossum, not an opossum. Wouldn't that be an opossum?
I think you should just call it a possum. Letter A, and then just possum.
Oh. But Steve, how does this play out? If a noun starts with a vowel, I thought you started out with an A-N instead of an A.
I think they're probably saying that you spell it correctly with an O, but no one pronounces the O, so they're splitting the difference and saying a possum.
So the headline reads, a possum was living in a 7-year-old's room for 3 days before anyone noticed. Wouldn't it be... Doesn't it seem to be an opossum?
Well, I think you'd have to look up the pronunciation of opossum.
Opossum? So the O might be...
Silent.
Silent?
No. There are two different... Wait, it says here, according to mentalfloss.com,
yes,
that in North America, opossum and possum describe the same thing.
Yeah, but they're writing opossum.
Right. If they were writing possum, then I'd say A, but if they're writing opossum with an O, I would go A-N.
Totally unrelated. Christ is risen. Shouldn't it have been Christ has risen? Because that's bothering me from yesterday's post.
That is a segue I will never get over.
Well, I mean, there are these little things that drive you nuts, and yes, it should be an opossum.
I think the answer to yours is because they're celebrating the fact that there was a rising,
right,
but it's still affecting people.
So he is risen.
I think.
It's driving me nuts yesterday.
If he were deceased, he would still be deceased. So
right.
He is still risen.
Right. Right.
And from here on out, you're on your own.
Yes. Right.
Still didn't clarify, but that's all right.
So here's the story. And please know that during the story, every time I get to the phrase a opossum, I'm going to wince just a little because I...
Well, then
I
just think correct
it's
in, it.
I think it's incorrect.
Do your autocorrect for yourself.
One unlucky mom in Ohio realized that an opossum, even though it says a opossum in the story, has been living among her daughter's things for 3 whole days, it says here on the... In the story,
they are so ugly. God, I'm so sorry. I know
you're not good.
Is risen, but I'm sorry.
Think, like, if you were walking through a 7-year-old girl's bedroom and you saw a bunch of stuffed animals and you saw this thing on a shelf or something, wouldn't you just go, "That's one of the cute, adorable stuffed animals my daughter has"?
But they're not cute. They have this long pink nose and these little beady eyes.
Yeah, there's better looking animals. In an interview with BuzzFeed News, Caitlin and her husband Brian recounted how their two daughters had a visitor, quote unquote. They used words like creature and rat, the horrified mom told BuzzFeed News. The seven-year-old refused to sleep in her room. They sleep in their room every night, but I told her she could sleep in the guest room that night if it made her feel better. The couple checked the bedroom and found no trace of any creature, but they suspected that it might be a mouse, and then they laid a few traps. A few days later, their 10-year-old daughter came running in to tell them that the creature was back. Brian said that the opossum was actually snuggled into one of the girls' dresses.
Ew. And they smell, too. They have an odor.
The aroma alone would say to you there is either an opossum or a opossum in your daughter's bedroom. The opossum was snuggled into one of the girls' dresses and had its head peeking out over the pocket. Well, it was doing that just to be overly cute, so they wouldn't do anything awful to it. Remember how in E.T. dressed like Gert for a second or two, and you go, oh, E.T.
Opossums look like E.T.
A little like E.T.
The babies are cute, and I feel bad saying it. The dog was out in the yard, and Kona had never seen one before, and it scared me. I saw this possum. And I'm just going possum.
Yeah.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
And then it like ran into my vegetable garden where Kona couldn't get to him, but the possum didn't know that. So I saw it play dead. I thought for a minute Kona
really
killed it. It just played dead.
But I think here's a question next time Steve Dale is up. I don't think they're playing dead. I think they go into like some kind of a shock and it knocks them out.
Like the fainting goats?
Like the fainting goats.
Because I've seen that happen. I can tell they can't choose when they play dead. You're right.
Right.
I didn't know that. Perhaps the most famous characteristic of the opossum is its tendency to play dead in front of predators. When the animal experiences intense fear in the face of danger, it seizes up and flops to the ground where it can remain for hours, staring blankly ahead and sticking out its tongue, much like me. It freaked me. I had never seen a possum play possum before, and I really thought the dog killed it.
Can I tell you, when I did this on a fairly regular basis, not where we live now, but in our old apartment, if I would barbecue at night, never in the daytime, but only at night, they would smell it. You could see them coming from beyond the yard. Like, you'd see them with their noses up in the air. Right. I love Malibu chicken. I can't believe Malibu chicken. So it would just like make its way toward the yard. And as it got close, I'd have to do is I would go like, like that. And that would do it. It would stiffen up and just fall backwards. It was
Seriously?
The craziest thing. Yeah. But then it would just lay there for a while I was out there barbecuing.
It's a comatose-like state. It's an involuntary reaction triggered by stress.
Yes.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And this, if I may, they slow the spread of Lyme disease. I know possums aren't that cute, but they should be a welcome addition to your backyard or a little girl's bedroom.
They're not.
Here's why. Unlike other mammals that carry ticks and therefore spread Lyme disease, the possums gobble up 90% of the ticks that attach to them.
Mm.
It's a tick eater.
Mm-hmm. All right, I like it just slightly more than I did a minute ago, but still, I don't want it in my yard.
All right, here's maybe another reason you don't want it around. A single possum consumes 5,000 of the parasites per tick season.
Oh, all right.
5,000!
They won me over.
The more possums in your area, the fewer ticks.
That's true. That's true. Getting back to the mom who had an opossum in her daughter's bedroom. That's just sloppy journalism, Wendy. Let's be honest. We realized after the fact that we should have noticed some things, she told BuzzFeed. Some toys had been knocked over. The dog's food was missing. So we knew that it had been in the rest of the house as well. The dog never made a peep the whole time the possum was in our house.
Really?
I find that hard to believe.
Me too.
Wouldn't you know? You mentioned the smell. That's the first thing I would notice. Right? There's no way an animal could be in your house for 3 days and you wouldn't notice something that's horribly wrong.
And again, the dog should be like freaking
barking.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. How did they get around that?
I don't know.
I think the dog and the possum had some sort of a deal worked out.
They were going to play poker later.
Right. As they often do. All right. We have more for you coming up in just a little bit. Stick around. We're 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Springtime is here, and I'll tell you about it later. I'm sorry, I was a little premature here.
Wendy, you can't interrupt Men at Work.
Kookaburra sits in the old oak tree.
That's what I'm hearing. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN. You found out some fun facts about possums.
Stop
but
it.
Is this worthy of the radio? Can you say it on the air? Would you prefer not to?
No, I went to mentalfloss.com and we learned some things. One that you knew, that they don't choose when to play dead. It's just a reaction.
They have this weird shock system that if something happens that gets to them, they pass out. They're like almost in a coma, an opossum coma.
Yes. They're the only marsupials found north of Mexico. Marsupials are pouched mammals.
Like your kangaroos.
Exactly.
Yeah.
An offensive odor sells their performance. A picture of a possum playing dead doesn't really do it justice.
So if they've got that odor thing, wouldn't you think if it was caged up in somebody's house that it would just automatically dispense that odor? Wouldn't you imagine?
Yes. That's why I can't understand no one found this possum.
Have you ever had, I don't know if you've ever had an animal trapped in your house or something, but they go nuts. They panic.
Well, this one was playing dress up and relaxing.
Right. It had time to enjoy itself. In an apartment I lived in years ago, a raccoon came in through the skylight.
Yeah.
And it was in the hallway.
Oh, my
God. And it was just, it went ballistic because it was in an enclosed area.
I was
area.
Trying to get back out to the wild.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't like your decorating.
Not at all.
I gotta get out of here.
That's the first thing I heard. You don't do stripes and solids like this. No. What's wrong with you?
And if you do, they have to be the same color scheme.
Yeah. Boy, I learned a lot that day.
Also, opossums are immune to most snake venom. That's interesting. Their memories are surprisingly sharp.
Yes.
I know you're saying that, and how do they know?
Why do
they
know that?
It says researchers found that possums are better at remembering which runway led to tasty treats.
Oh.
Whereas rats, cats, dogs, and pigs sometimes didn't figure out, hey, this is the one where the good food's at.
Oh, all right, that makes sense.
I
pictured it just walking down the street and just going, hey, you're Philip, right? I think we went to grade school together.
They almost never get rabies. That's pretty interesting.
Because
you always say if you see one during the daytime because they're nocturnal. Yes, because it's
be rabid.
But it isn't. Their tail acts as a fifth appendage.
To what means, Wendy?
Like it can hang onto a tree from the...
Oh, that would be handy.
Yeah.
I wish I had that.
I know you do.
I would love that.
They're constantly self-grooming, and it says also here their eyes aren't totally black. It looks like it, but they do have whites and irises. But because their pupils are so large, their eyes appear completely black from
the distance. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that part.
And the reproductive systems are kind of complicated.
In what way?
The way it gives birth and raises its young isn't the only thing that's interesting about the opossum's reproductive life.
Mm-hmm.
Females have two vaginal tracts and two uteri. I never heard it called uteri.
No, that's a new word to me.
And males have
sounds like something you. That sounds like a new car, Tesla would put out or something.
2019 uteri.
I'm in. Put me on the want list.
And males have a forked or bifurcated thing.
It says that?
No, but their appendage.
Oh, their reproductive organ is forked. Huh.
This is a fairly typical...
Sporked or forked? What did you say? Forked.
Forked.
Oh.
This is fairly typical for marsupials.
Tell them that.
But when European colonizers first landed in North America centuries ago, they didn't know what to make of the confusing genitalia.
Like a regular fork or a salad fork? Does it say?
One explanation they came up with was that the male possums impregnated females through the nose, but that's not really what happens. But yeah,
Somebody thought that?
Yes.
You pay through the nose. I've heard that, but I've never heard this.
But they have, the females have two...
uteri.
Yes, and two vaginal tracts.
Wow.
That's crazy.
That would be too much for some.
So with the forked thing...
Yes.
And the two...
Yes.
I
can't wait to hear what question this is, but yes.
I'm done. I can't ask it. But that's interesting.
That's very interesting. I'm sure that's what they tell their friends. I have something interesting. Really? Tell me more. Nope. I think you know too much.
and start calling yourself an opossum, not
an
opossum.
That's the part that bothers me more than anything.
Do you know what bothers me? I get sucked into so much clickbait. I got to tell you, you're pretty guilty of it too.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it happen.
I go through periods where I can't get out of it.
Right. Right. And I was surprised to find out that Jerry Mathers, who played the Beaver, is 70 years old. And if your
Beaver is
70,
I didn't know that. Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And then as I read these things, then you go into the rabbit hole and you just read a bunch
one
of things.
One after another after another.
There are so many typos in this because they were talking about he played Tony in West Side Story and Benjamin Horne in Twin Peaks, and mm-hmm. I can't think of his name. I can't think of his name.
I know who you mean.
Not Russ Tamblyn, but the other guy
I was going to guess Russ Tamblyn.
No, it's he played Benjamin something. Tony from West Side Story. Anyway, they were talking about him. He's pretty old. He's up there in years, yeah. And they said that he's still got a career in acting, and he played Ben Holm on Twin Peaks, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like,
Ben Holmes?
No, it's
right?
Horn. Oh, H-O-R-N-E.
Oh.
And then they repeated it again, and Richard Beamer.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. It was driving me nuts. There are so many right. typos on everything.
Right.
They forget words.
Yes.
It's like anybody can just put anything up on the internet.
And they'll put pictures of people. They'll say,
how
you
do
won't
they do
believe
that?
He died. And it's a picture of John Goodman who didn't die.
I don't understand how they can
right.
do that. There are plenty of things going around with Melissa McCarthy had lost weight, and this is what she did. She put lemon juice in a blender with her finger and drank it every night, and this is what happened.
Yeah.
And it's not her. It's not. There's a picture
right,
that's not even her in the.
Should be illegal.
Right? How come no one's policing this?
Several times, I'm sure you've fallen for this one too. It'll say something like 15 celebrities who are cannibals. Number 11 will make you wet your pants. You go, well, the challenge is on. Let me see who number 11 is. And in reality, probably half of them aren't really cannibals anyway.
I know.
But number 11, you'll be happy to know, did not make me wet my pants, so I'm suing them. And I have an opossum for an attorney.
Okay.
So good luck to them.
You're suing them.
Yeah. All right, we must take a break. When we return, Eric Zorn will be here after the news to talk about things with you. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. The greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. We sing the praises of Zorn.
Eric Zorn is here. You know him from the Chicago Tribune, where he has been a columnist for how many years, Eric?
About 33 years.
That's
now,
longevity
like that.
Is what that 34 is.
34 years.
Congratulations.
I can't even remember. It's been so long, I can't even remember.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And on your 50th, what will they get you, do you think?
Well, they get me a watch on my 30th anniversary at the paper.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they'll get me a an iPad or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I bet something nice like an iPad.
Like that. I don't know if I'm going to make it to 50.
You'll make
we'll
it.
See. We'll see.
You'll definitely make it. You wanted to talk about our current president's tax returns, and you maintain, I saw you write about this, that we will not see them prior to the 2020 election.
No, we're not going to get a look at them because it's going to be tied up in court. And the reason is, it's kind of this complicated area of law, but what's happened is, of course, is that Trump has promised us that we'll see his tax returns. They're under audit, but someday you'll see them. And then he says people don't want to see them and so on. And now that the Democrats have control of the House, they have the right by law to ask to see his tax returns. The law, it's a law that is very clear that says that the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee can ask to see anybody's return,
mm-hmm.
and this can be provided to that person as long as those returns are reviewed in closed session.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no qualifications on this law at all, so that it seems like it's a slam dunk that the Democrats in Washington can just say, hey, we want to see your tax returns.
Mm-hmm.
And then the information will be transmitted to them to review in private, and they look at them, and everybody realizes that because Congress leaks and because this could be, I mean, I think everybody realizes there's some stuff in those tax returns that Trump realizes is very damaging
right.
to him. He doesn't want anyone to see that, either damaging legally to him or to his reputation as a wealthy, successful businessman. In any case, I think he sees it as a really a perilous thing, and he's going to fight. And
doesn't he have to turn it over?
Well, here's the thing that I read up on this quite a bit, which is that there are some Supreme Court decisions in the past that say that when you have a law like this, where the cold letter of the law seems absolutely unambiguous, it's not there's no qualification. Like if they have a good reason, but the Supreme Court has said that you do have to have some kind of a reason, that you can't just use the powers. And these laws are not, there's nothing exactly on point about tax returns, but the law, the decision in this case came from something that happened during the McCarthy hearings. And they called somebody before Congress and they put him under oath, and he refused to say whether his friends, you know, he said, well, he talked about himself, and then he refused to talk about his friends, whether they were members of the Communist Party. And the Congress said, well, wait a minute, we have every right to do this because the law says we have a right. And the Supreme Court said, no, that right is limited. That right, you can't just use your power to harass somebody, to just chase down any blind end you want to. And this is the argument the president's lawyers are going to make, which is, you are not, Congress, you are not exercising your legitimate oversight capacity. I mean, because the Democrats have couched this request in saying that we want these returns because we want to be able to see how the IRS deals with presidential tax returns. And the Republicans are saying, well, if that's really what you want, why are you only asking for Donald Trump's tax returns? Why aren't you asking to see Barack Obama's full tax returns? I think Obama may have even turned them over, but
I'm sure he did.
But they're only looking at certain presidents. They're not going to go back and reexamine how they looked at Obama's tax returns, for instance.
But haven't they said, Eric, that each of the last, I think it's 12 or 13 presidents, has been more than happy to disclose them? He's the first in that long that has said no. He doesn't actually maintain that it's a private affair. He says because he's under audit, he can't. But then anyone who knows tax law says, oh, no, you can't.
That's total pretext. Yeah, right. You can't. It has nothing to do with being under audit.
Right.
You're right. It's a tradition in our country that presidents and presidential candidates disclose their tax returns.
Yeah.
But it's not a law. And people, I mean, I think it's a very good reason for there to be a demand for this, which is that you want to see where your president's financial interests lie, and you want to find out if there are any potential conflicts, any ways in which they are being funded, in ways that are any debts they have, any you want to be able to get a sense of who they are through their financial dealings.
Right.
I think it's a really legitimate thing. I'm glad that it's a tradition. Trump has violated the tradition. His argument is, well, I violated the tradition and I got elected anyway, so nuts to you. My conclusion about that is that there is a legitimate legal fight that's going to take place. It's got to go to the Supreme Court before the IRS gives those tax returns to the House Ways and Means Committee, and that's going to last at least until the 2020 election, because that's the pace of justice at the Supreme Court level. And then after that, the Democrats aren't going to care that much, I don't think. They don't want to see those returns. The other thing that's happening, which is sort of interesting and along the same lines, is that Illinois is among the states that is advancing legislation that will deny on the ballot a spot to a presidential candidate who has not disclosed his or her tax returns. So that if you're running in the primary or the general election as a for president,
right,
you haven't turned over your tax returns, you can't be on the ballot. It's like, you know, if like, if
really,
so you would essentially be forfeiting those states.
You'd be forfeiting those states. Now, a couple things about that. One is that every state that I'm aware of that is moving in this direction, no one has actually passed the law. I think Washington State's a little bit ahead of us on this. Our law has passed the Senate and is going to the House, I think is right. I can't remember exactly. It's passed one chamber, has gone to the other chamber.
Right.
And there's a real question about whether this is constitutional.
I'm sure.
Whether you can say, you can, in effect, create another ballot access requirement for a presidential candidate. There are requirements right now. You have to be a natural born citizen. You
35
have to be
years
35
old.
35 years old and so on. So there are those qualifications. Does this illegally add another qualification to that in a way that's not in the Constitution? There are some interesting legal arguments that say that it's not actually a requirement, that it's not the same. Because a requirement would be something that you can't really change about yourself, right? You can't change where you were born. You can't change how old you are.
Right.
But you can turn over your tax returns. It's just, it's making you comport to a certain kind of behavior. But in any case, every state where I've heard that this is moving along is a blue state anyway. So let's say, worst case scenario for Donald Trump, he's not on the ballot in Illinois. He's not going to win Illinois anyway.
Yeah. Right.
He's not going to win Washington State anyway.
That's true.
The states where this is happening, it's not going to cost him any electoral votes. It may be a, it's conceivable we would have this bizarre presidential election in which the Republican candidate is not on the ballot in, you know,
in several states.
In 15 states or something. Yeah. Like that. It's possible this could happen, and he could still win because he wasn't going to win those states anyway.
But then there'd be huge write-in campaigns, wouldn't there be?
In those states?
Yeah.
But the Democrats are going to win those states anyway. Yeah. I mean, maybe. You're right. But it's sort of one of these things where, and all this serves to do is to call further public attention to the fact
right.
that Trump has not disgorged his taxes, and I do think that when the fullness of time in history, when history reveals Donald Trump's tax returns, you'll see what the New York Times found when they looked into Trump's financial dealings, which is that this guy is not all that successful a businessman. He's basically a charlatan and a huckster and a fraud.
What would bother him more, though, the disclosure of exactly what you just said, that he's not that great of a businessman, or that he's getting some sort of kickbacks from places like Russia to build hotels over there? What would disturb him more, do you think?
Well, his ego being as large as it is, it may be just the fact that he's not nearly as rich and not nearly as successful as he likes to portray himself.
And as we all presumed him to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But obviously, if he's legally compromised in some of these ways, then that would be a real problem for him. But the bottom line is that we're almost certain not to see these returns, the information contained in them, before we go back to the polls again.
Right.
And so I wrote a piece last week basically saying, you know, hey, this is all really interesting, and I'm sure that the information that we're not seeing is really interesting, but we're not going to get a chance to look at it, unfortunately.
Wouldn't you think that even if you were an ardent supporter of his, just simply as a taxpayer, you would say, it's only fair that I see this? Wouldn't you imagine that to be the case?
Yeah, there's a lot of things you would think that would be deal breakers, but the thing is, we are so polarized right now in terms of, if you support Trump, you support him no matter what. You support him no matter what the Mueller report said.
Right.
And if you're opposed to Trump, you're opposed to him no matter what. So things like this. Remember during the campaign when Trump said I could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and I wouldn't lose any voters? Yeah. I think it's fairly true in a way that there's not a whole lot that could surprise or disappoint people who support Trump in his basic, you know, attitude and his basic approaches to governing. So we're just in that situation. One other thing that I think is interesting, which is that the Democrats who are advancing this Trump tax law in Illinois now are all ardent supporters of J.B. Pritzker, and J.B. Pritzker didn't disclose his full tax returns. You know, this law would require.
I don't think Bernie Sanders has either, has he?
Didn't he just recently?
I think he's doing it now. Yeah,
because we found out that he's a millionaire.
Right.
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 That's
right,
the big controversy with him. He's actually richer than he said. But in any case, it's interesting that you would think that voters would want to know, and that
I would imagine,
and would maybe even vote accordingly. But
not always.
I think not. Well, hardly ever.
Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Bill and Wendy with you on WGN, along with Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. Eric, do you have any stories about controversial murals?
I do.
You do?
It's funny you should ask about that. Huh. There's stories in the, it's been in the papers lately, Tribune had it over the weekend, about Julian Middle School in Oak Park, where they have removed a 1937 mural, the Works Progress Administration, you know, in the New Deal, they would hire artists to draw murals. And there was a mural up there in the school called Child and Sports Winter, by a Chicago-born artist, one of the hundreds who did artists. And it's, you know, kids skating and frolicking in the snow and so on. And the problem with this mural, as far as the school is concerned, the school is about half minority students, and Oak Park is a fairly diverse community now. There's no children of color in this entire mural. There's a couple dozen kids in it, at least. And there are no children of color, so they have removed this mural. There are children who felt that the mural was making them not feel welcome at the school, not feel part of the school. The outrage about this that has been percolating. Some people have compared it to book burning, and said that this is, you know, a historical whitewash. And I'm someone who really believes that Confederate monuments need to come down.
Yeah.
That when you have a monument in a town that celebrates this, you know, the Rebellion of the South and what that all stood for, that is a very, very painful reminder of a very painful part of our past. The fact that Oak Park was basically a white community back in the 1930s, I don't think was a reflection of active acts of racism and hostility certainly there was racism in society then, but the fact that this mural did not, there's nothing about it that suggests, you know, white supremacy. It's just that they're all white kids there.
Right.
And the fact they took it down, I think, really, it goes to, even to me, who I believe in the power of these old symbols. I think that goes too far.
Yeah.
I think that you can contextualize a mural like that without essentially taking it down.
Couldn't the mural have been updated to include kids?
See, that was my
that's a great question.
Too.
Don't
that
you
is
think?
My thought too. Just like what a little pigment might be able to do, that you could have it, you could update it, and you wouldn't have to like go through and do a whole lot of stuff like that. But just to have a few faces of color,
of course,
would have been a nice thing to do.
Why did that not happen?
I'm guessing that there are probably some rules about this, about our work in general, and there's some sense that we don't do that to artwork.
Yeah,
that's like that.
Well, so. That is true. You wouldn't,
wouldn't change a book.
Yeah,
right.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that there are actually versions of some old books where they do take out,
they leave things out,
take out some words, but it just, this seems to me to be sort of a part of this of hypersensitivity to things. That the fact is that yes, in 1937, Oak Park probably was basically a white community,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that this mural depicts that, it does not mean that you in 2019, you are excluded here. You are not welcome here if you're in a school with this many, this many students. And I think it's also it is really part of history, and that in some ways it is erasing history in an interesting way that I find somewhat troubling that they probably needed to contextualize that, but to take it down is a bridge too far for me. I'm really interested in what people have to say about it. But
what do you make of the, I'm sure you're aware of the story with Kate Smith and her recording of God Bless America at sporting events. Do you know this?
No.
So for years, especially at Yankee Stadium, but not exclusively Yankee Stadium, other arenas as well, at various times in the game, like for baseball, it'd be during the seventh inning stretch, they would play Kate Smith's version of God Bless America.
Right.
So now it's been found out that Kate Smith, years and years ago, recorded some songs that were in the realm of racist. You know, if they weren't straight up racist, they were pretty close to being considered racist songs.
Like what?
So I don't have the titles, but if you heard the titles, you would go, oh yeah, that doesn't sound very savory. So I think every sports venue that was playing her music in the last week or two has said, yeah, we're going to put this on hold.
I'm going to have Louis C.K. singing
right.
God Bless America.
Right.
You know, it's an interesting, that again seems to me to go too far. As you probably remember, one of my passions in life is old-time fiddle music.
Yep.
I play a lot of old-time fiddle music. And there are some bands and some artists who are revered in this tradition who the titles of some of their tunes are straight-up racist.
Sure.
There are some, the Gid Tanner and the Skillet Lickers have the N-word in titles of some of their tunes. It's just like, this is what the culture was like. We would never use those names for the tunes. A lot of those tunes we've changed the names of those tunes, but there's even a question now from among people is, do you play music from people like, from bands like that, from artists like that, who were straight up racist, who have, you know, quotes, interviews in the past that are like it, that we have, there's a lot of this stuff in our past that you know, if we try to erase all of it, you find out that so many people were products of their time, or worse. I mean, I would not excuse the racism in those kind of things. That's just, oh, they're just good old boys in their day. Kate's, well, you know, what, do you have some titles there of Kate's?
Here's a couple of titles. That's Why Darkies Were Born, which was a hit for her in 1931, and also a song called Pickaninny Heaven. There was also pictures of her with mammy dolls. Her family has come out and said, please believe us when we tell you Kate Smith was a very well-intentioned woman, but because, you know, times were different in the 30s than they are now, it's 80 years ago, things have changed dramatically, that she wouldn't have done things like that today, but this was 80 years ago.
It's very difficult, I think, to go back and
Well, it's almost 90 years ago, right? You said
1931.
It was early 30s. Yeah, it's very close to 90 years ago. Yeah, I mean, I think it's very difficult to apply those sort of standards, because when you start doing that, then you have to go back and look at the founders of our nation, at the presidents we've had who owned slaves, at the fact that times were different, norms were different, and you have to contextualize that in a way that's a little smarter than just saying they don't meet our contemporary standards.
True.
If she did it today, that's
then you
different.
Got a problem. Yeah.
Oh, totally. Well, I mean, even you talk about gay marriage and how our country's pretty much on board with that now. Barack Obama was opposed to gay marriage, even when he was running for president the second time. So it's like, it's not, when you're judging people by today's standards, you have to be careful. You have to give them some leeway. And when you judge a mural like this, you have to say, well, let's put it in the historical context and not just say it's always 2019. So,
Eric Zorin of the Chicago Tribune. Thanks, Eric. We'll talk to you in a week. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Don Kleppen. He's in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.